The bell that tolls this evening can only mean one thing, my friends. One place. London. If only our view of this wondrous city was as clear as the sound of those chimes. The fog tonight is especially thick with mystery and dread. A real peace super. To peer into the London fog of our collective imagination is to conjure up a dark romance with a well-seasoned metropolis. For from within that fog, you can hear horrors both imagined, such as the dragging, beastly footsteps of Robert Louis Stevenson's monster, Mr. Hyde. And horrors all too real, such as the wretched fiend who stalked the streets of Whitechapel in 1888. Both strolling side by side, both terrifying tales, forever producing the same effect on our imaginations. You are now in London, to quote Percy Bysshe Shelley, that great sea whose ebb and flow at once is deaf and loud, and on the shore vomits its wrecks and still howls on for more. Yet in its depth, what treasures! What treasures we shall discover tonight, my friends. What treasures indeed. Let's go hunting, shall we? This is Fireside Mystery Theater. Shakespeare's Scottish play. Fair is foul, and foul is fair, hover through the fog and filthy air. So shall our first foray into the London fog this evening. The Madam's Fancy. It is a bit of historical fiction that takes place in the 1840s inside that famous waxworks on Baker Street. They're about to close for the day, but I think if we make haste, we can still manage to sneak inside.
Today's receipts, ma mère. Not too bad at all, eh?
My bifocals, if you please, Fanny.
Here you are, madam.
Merci.
We most certainly benefited from the holiday weekend, mother.
Your waxworks are more popular than ever. The queues get longer all the time.
What is it, Mother?
And that large group of Prussian tourists, they continue to linger around the galleries. We're still trying to close for the evening. And we had to stop them from trying to flirt with your Marie Antoinette.
Is there something wrong, Mother?
What's the matter, madam?
Are you not happy with today's returns?
Oh. Francois, mon cher, you are my most beloved and cherished son, but, as is frequently the case, your mathematics are not without fault.
But these figures are the most accurate, I assure you, Mother.
Are they, my son? Did you remember to account for all of today's group discounts? For example, our Prussian guests over there stroking the petticoat of poor Marie Antoinette.
Well, that's right, I suppose.
Francois, please tell those Prussian gentlemen it is now closing hour.
Yes, Mother.
Fanny, I wonder what those gentlemen would think about that lovely gazelle if they knew that I sculpted that pale and pretty likeness from her severed head. The head I recovered after it had fallen from the guillotine.
Such a gruesome tale, milady.
Well, that gruesome tale helped my memoirs sell quite well, dear Fanny. In telling my life story, I could not exclude the blood, scandal, and beheadings of the revolution. I but hardly survived to tell the tale myself. Fanny, who is that man standing alone over there? Surely he knows it is time to close our exhibit.
Oh, that's Mr. Dickens, milady. He visits us quite often, always alone, often for many hours at a time.
Well, he has to go. Go over to him and tell him this.
But that's Mr. Dickens. Do you not realize who that is? He's a most popular and distinguished author.
Oh, famous is he? Do you think perhaps I should sculpt his likeness for the exhibition?
That is a most marvelous idea. Look, here he comes.
Excuse me, sir. It is now 4:15, and time for everyone to leave. Come on, then. We open bright and early tomorrow.
Oh, my apologies, good sir. I'm sorry, I was just...
Monsieur Dickens, is it? Oh, please excuse my son's impatience.
No, not at all. Yes, Charles Dickens is my name. Am I fortunate enough to be in the company of the Madame Tussaud?
Mr. Charles Dickens? Sorry, sir, of course, I didn't recognize you.
Yes, I am Madame Marie Tussaud. I do bid you welcome to my humble house of curios. Well, I say, Charles Dickens, well, it is I who has the great fortune, the most famous and esteemed man of letters. Oh,
so you're familiar with my work?
Well...
Mr. Dickens, this is indeed an honor. Could you perhaps make an inscription on my volume of Oliver Twist?
I would be delighted.
Monsieur Dickens, this is my son, François.
Francis. Francis Tussaud, sir. Please call me Francis. What an honor to meet you, Mr. Dickens. Mother, do you realize I think that you're in Mr. Dickens' latest novel? Is it not true, sir?
You cause me to blush, Francis, my good sir. I'm afraid the evidence may be stacked against me.
I am a character in one of your books. Well, how did I not know this?
Well, maybe you are Madame Tussaud, and perhaps you are not.
Come now, Mr. Dickens. The character of Mrs. Jarley, the owner of the waxworks, in the old curiosity shop, is obviously very much in the likeness of my mother.
If it pleases the court, I will neither confirm nor deny. Madame Tussaud.
Oui, my dear Monsieur Dickens.
I've always wondered...
Yes?
You offer a prize of £20 to anyone who can spend an entire night in your chamber of horrors. Is that really true?
Oui, this is true.
Well, has anyone ever? Well, that is, has...
One person. Only one person so far has succeeded in this.
And so this person won the £20.
Yes. However, I had to send the check to the Bedlam Asylum, where he has taken up residence ever since that night.
Oh, you're pulling my leg, Madame Tussaud.
If it pleases the court, I can neither confirm nor deny.
Such a keen wit you have, Madame Tussaud. I apologize most sincerely for lingering here past the closing time, but please, understand, it's only because I'm such a great admirer of your waxworks.
Madam, Lord and Lady Westerly are here for their appointment with you.
Good evening, your lord and ladyship.
Good evening.
Is that Mr. Dickens?
Oh, Lady Westerly. Mr. Charles Dickens. Fancy meeting you here, good sir.
Mr. Dickens, did you ever have a chance to review that little pamphlet of sonnets I composed?
Ah, yes. I've been meaning to...
My wife's poetry is quickly becoming the talk of the town.
Such a coincidence running into you here, Mr. Dickens.
Not a coincidence, my dear. This is all part of that grand universal design we always speak of at our meetings. Would you happen to know your astrological sign by any chance, Mr. Dickens?
Oh.
Oh, it's already half past. I really must be heading back home. Madame Tussaud, Francis, Lord and Lady Westerly, I bid you all a very good evening.
What a clever author he is, that Mr. Dickens. I tell you, if he keeps working at his craft, perhaps one day he'll write something truly memorable.
As you mentioned craft, my dear, that is precisely why we are here, Madame Tussaud.
Oh, Lord and Lady Westerly, I am at your service. What may I do for you?
Where is that figure of yours? The one that breathes?
Ah, you mean the Sleeping Beauty. Come with me.
What is the secret?
How do you make this figure breathe in a way that is so lifelike?
This is one of my earliest figures. I sculpted her, I think, when I was but 24. The illusion is quite simple, actually.
Illusion?
Oui, madame. Surely you do not think it anything more than that.
It is quite all right to confide in us. We understand such things, and we know that you do as well.
Understand such things?
We were close friends of the dear and departed Mr. Jeremy Bentham. Does that name ring a bell with you?
Oh, Mr. Bentham! How ghastly.
Shh, Fanny. And might I ask you how you know of our association with Monsieur Bentham?
As we mentioned, we were close friends of his.
We all belong to the same hermetic order.
And we are all passionately curious as to how you performed that miracle with Mr. Bentham.
Miracle? My lord and lady, please believe me. I do not understand what you ask of me. I am no sorceress.
It was kept out of the papers, but they called on Madame privately to help repair the body of Mr. Bentham.
Monsieur Bentham, after his death, as you know, he willed that his corpse be preserved and displayed in a glass case at London University for all to see. His body was dressed in his own clothes and then seated in a chair. They called on me to replace his head with a wax likeness, since the mummified head had taken on a quite gruesome appearance. My wax sculpture is, well, it's a considerable improvement. I even used some of Monsieur Bentham's real hair, but this is all I did, I assure you.
Madame Tussaud, we want you to feel that you can trust us. Everything that we discuss during this visit will be kept in the strictest confidence.
Ever since you laid your handiwork upon Mr. Bentham's body, we have noticed some very significant changes.
Changes?
We have seen it with our own eyes. Mr. Bentham's chest now rises and falls with the breath of life, just as your Sleeping Beauty does.
Oh, well, I did no such thing to his body.
You deny it, then.
And you had nothing at all to do with the way its eyes now blink?
Or how his foot taps?
Or how his hand lifts his cane?
I am certain there is an explanation for all of this, but please believe me, I did nothing of the sort to the corpse of Monsieur Bentham. Not to his eyes or his legs, his hands, or nothing. It must be due to the morbid tampering of a mechanical engineer of some kind.
Do you not know that we have already considered that possibility? Well, the body was re-examined, and nothing of the sort was found. Yet it continues to exhibit signs of life.
It is all right, Madame Tussaud. We understand your desire to maintain a certain modicum of secrecy. The greater world is not prepared for such things. But some of us are.
I suppose we should get more to the point, dearest. Madame Tussaud, when my wife and I pass on from this world, we have made issue jointly in our wills, our present bodies must be preserved much in the same manner that our friend Mr. Bentham's was preserved. Mm-hmm. And we insist that it must be you, madam, to oversee the process. And we will pay very handsomely for the privilege.
Very handsomely.
To demonstrate to you the degree of our seriousness, consider this check a retainer for your services.
Sacrebleu.
We will commission you to create our likeness in wax, not for public display, of course. And upon our passing,
you will do whatever it is you have done to prolong the life and spirit of Mr. Bentham.
Very well, my lord and lady. As you wish. Come to my studio next Monday, and I shall begin my work.
Splendid. There isn't a possibility that you would come to you any sooner than that?
Well, perhaps. May I let you know tomorrow?
Certainly.
May I ask, is there a particular urgency in this matter, your lordship?
Well, my doctor is concerned about certain spells I've been suffering from. He fears... Pay it no mind. Next Monday will do fine.
Then we have an agreement.
Oui.
And we understand one another now, do we?
We do.
Outstanding. We shall see you next Monday, madame. Good evening.
Good evening, Madame Tussaud. And thank you.
Madam, are you really going to take their money? Just like that?
I do not see why I should not.
But what will happen when they find out that you cannot perform such magic?
They will already be dead. Oh, but, well, is there any harm in the end, really? If it is their conviction and their belief.
Then what do you make of their story about Mr. Jeremy Bentham? How his dead body comes to life? Do you believe that at all?
I am not certain that the inmates at Bedlam would even believe it. A postscript. The mummified corpse of Jeremy Bentham still sits in his chair and can be visited 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday at University College London. As prescribed in his will, the corpse is sometimes brought out to university board meetings where he is accounted as present but not voting. Throughout the decades, many have sworn that the body of Mr. Bentham still stirs at odd moments. Madame Tussaud sculpted her own self-portrait in wax in 1842 at the age of 81, shortly before retiring and leaving her business to her son, Francois, or as he preferred to be called, Francis. The self-portrait still stands at the museum on Baker Street in London, along with Madame Tussaud's original Sleeping Beauty figurine, whose chest still heaves with the breath of life to this very day. It is the oldest surviving figure from the original collection. And now this word from one of our sponsors.
I have been waiting all my life to see this.
Oh, yes, my friends. Behold the crown jewels of England.
Yawn. Aren't there cooler things that we could see here at the Tower of London?
Michael, come on.
Enough with the king's bling already. Like, where did all the beheadings take place?
Oh, my God, I am so embarrassed to be with you right now.
Come on, you call this the most haunted place in London? Really? I haven't felt a single shiver or slightest sense of dread until you dragged me into this royal boar fest.
Can we all just keep our voices down?
Oh, wow. The sovereign scepter. Will you look at that?
Oh, my God. I need to fan myself. That is the Star of Africa diamond.
Excusez-moi, mademoiselle.
Oh, yeah, yes?
We just want to get a better look.
Oh, at St. Edward's Crown. Of course, I don't blame you.
Bah! That piece of tin?
We are talking about your necklace.
It is breathtaking.
Oui, and those earrings.
Oh, you mean these handcrafted Fifth and Maiden creations I'm wearing? Oh, well, but my friends...
Fifth and Maiden! Fifth and Maiden! Look, everyone, this woman is wearing Fifth and Maiden bespoke jewelry!
Oh, my. Oh, easy now, everyone.
Please, let us take a photograph with you.
Please.
Great. Now we're never getting out of here.
Professional speaker, James Reeser here. Fifth and Maiden offers wholesale, organic, luxury jewelry and housewares that blend clean lines...
With a bit of shimmer.
With a bit of shimmer. And exquisite natural finds directly from the stunning California coastline. All Fifth and Maiden pieces are handcrafted in their San Diego studio. To learn more, just go to their website, fifthandmaiden.storeenvy.com. Fifth and Maiden are the official Fireside Mystery Theater jewelers.
Are you all ready for us?
Yeah!
Well, I hope everyone listening at home is nice and cozy and has the lights turned down low. Now, where's my ticket? Oh my. Well, here at Victoria Station, the trains are extremely punctual. Looks like we have a train to catch. Let's climb aboard. We are going to travel a little bit southeast of London, into the English countryside of Kent, to venture into a different kind of fog, a vaporous mist, where certain terrors lie. Pleasing terrors, to borrow a phrase from the author whose story our next radio play is based. I'm talking about a man considered to be the finest author of ghost stories in the English language, Mr. Montagu Rhodes James. The tale is called Lost Hearts. And here to help us tell the tale in his inimitable style, gathered round his favorite hearth with a room full of friends and colleagues, is Mr. M.R. James himself.
All right. It appears I have all of your attention. Shall we begin?
Sir Monty, help me to understand. The story you're about to tell us is pure fiction, or is it not? I can never tell with you.
Well, Alan, given the setting we're all enjoying this moment by this brilliant and buoyant fire, I don't see what difference it really makes. You do want to hear my story, don't you?
Why, yes, of course.
Some years ago, when I was a mere but curious and eager lad, I ventured out to the estate of one Mr. Elias Abney. Aswilby Hall, as the estate was called, if my recollection is accurate. Mr. Abney was known by many to be quite an eccentric sort, but he was in possession of some very rare and sought-after volumes of ancient Greek and Roman lore that I desperately hoped I could obtain for my perusal.
And here we are, Mr. James.
Well, oh my, I can hardly conceal my excitement, Mr. Abney.
Pay particular attention to those shelves here, young man. It's there that you'll find...
Heavens, a virtual Aladdin's Cove of... May I?
No, go right ahead, Mr. James.
Well, I've never seen this edition of Orphic poems before.
There are only a dozen or so known to be in existence.
Professor Curran's, you know, the professor of Greek at Cambridge.
No, I should think so. We are in a regular correspondence, sir.
He was right, quite right, in saying that your library...
has the most complete and thorough collection of rare works pertaining to the great mysteries, the Orphic poems, the worship of Mithras, and the Neoplatonists.
And where on earth did you find this?
Ah, yes. The writings of Hermes Trismegistus.
Oh, it's bookmarked.
Ah, pay no mind to that.
Hermes Trismegistus, the father of alchemy and other such practices of the occult. Now, didn't he...
Now, please, Mr. James, if you could return that volume to where you found it on the shelf.
Are you expecting company, Mr. Abney?
Delightful. That must be him.
Who, may I ask, if that is?
My young cousin, Stephen. The poor lamb.
You're closely acquainted, then, I take it.
I've never met the boy before.
Oh.
That's a bit odd, I suppose, isn't it?
I wouldn't say that.
His mother passed 6 months ago, leaving the unfortunate fellow an orphan.
Oh, how dreadful. I'm sorry.
He's going to be in my charge from this day on. It will take a slight adjustment on my part, I'm sure, being accustomed to, apart from my servants, of course, living a more or less solitary existence. Come, Mr. James, let's go greet him, shall we? Ah, how are you, my boy? Do come in.
Come now, young fellow. Don't be shy. I'm your cousin Elias. Very pleased to meet you at last, Stephen.
Hello, sir.
Are you tired from your journey, Stephen?
I'm pretty well, sir. Thank you.
Oh! Where are my manners, Stephen? This is Mr. Montague James, a fellow scholar whose friendly visit I am presently enjoying.
How do you do, Master Stephen?
Pleased to meet you, sir.
Ah, just look at my cousin. How handsome. What a spiffy gentleman he is. How old are you, my boy?
I'm 12 years old, my next birthday, sir.
12? 12, you say?
On my next birthday.
Ah, yes. Well, you must be starving after such a long journey, Stephen. Here at Aswerby Hall, you shall know nothing but comfort and satisfaction. Parks?
Yes, sir.
Parks, take Master Stephen to Mrs. Bunch's room and let him have his tea, his supper, whatever it is.
Right away, sir.
Pardon my faulty memory, Stephen. Repeat it for me again. Your age again, my boy.
11.
And when is your birthday?
11th of September, sir.
Let me write that down in my book so I don't forget it. 11th of September? Got it. We'll be sure to make a very special day of it. Your 12th birthday, that is. That is a terrific age to be. 12. Well, now, go on. Don't let me keep you from your supper.
This way, Master Stephen.
Mrs. Bunch turned out to be the most comfortable and human person whom Stephen had met for some time. She made him feel completely at home, and they were great friends in a quarter of an hour, and great friends they remained.
Come now, Master Stephen. I've made some tarts from the berries we picked yesterday. Don't let them get cold now.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you, Mrs. Bunch.
Oh, yes, they are quite splendid, if I do say so myself. Where did you disappear to this morning, Master Stephen?
Oh, nowhere special. Just went for a stroll.
Oh, is that so, Master Stephen? Well, you certainly had a nice bit of sunshine to help you in your exploring.
I discovered some odd things here and there.
Oh, odd? What do you mean? Don't you like it here at Aswerby Hall?
It is quite lovely and peaceful here, if a bit lonesome sometimes. What is that strange thing hanging from the wall there? I keep meaning to ask you.
Oh, well, that is a musical instrument. A hurdy-gurdy, I believe it's called.
How unusual. I wonder what such a thing sounds like. Might I play with it?
Oh, certainly, my dear, but after tea. Now, have a seat now, why don't you?
Who built that curious temple at the end of the Laurel Walk?
Well, I don't rightly know. It was here long before I was employed by Master Abney, I'm certain. And I've been here for more than 20 years. Oh, dear, how the years do fly. Here's your tea, my dear.
Thank you, Mrs. Bunch. Who is the old man in the painting on the staircase? Do you know which one I mean?
The old man sitting at the table?
Yes, the one with the skull under his hand.
Oh, Well, I'm ashamed to say you've got me there, too. Alice, do you know?
Well, if memory serves, that is a portrait of Master Abney's grandfather.
Nonsense. That is Uncle Harold.
My eye! I knew Master Harold in the old days.
Well, then I'm afraid you were just as blind then as you are now. It was he who built the temple on the Laurel Walk to answer Master Stephen's earlier question.
Was he a good man?
Yes, he was good, fair and kind.
Rest his soul.
Do you think he's in heaven?
Oh, without any doubt, Master Stephen.
And Mr. Abney, my cousin, is he a good man? And will he go to heaven as well?
Good. Oh, bless the child. Oh.
Master's as kind a soul as ever I did see. Did I ever tell you of the little boy he took in out of the street, as you may say, these 7 years back?
Oh, and the little girl, too, some years before that.
I thought maybe I had told you about them.
No, do tell me about them, Mrs. Bunch. Now, this minute.
Well, the little girl, I don't seem to recollect so much about. I know Master brought her back with him from his walk one day, and he give orders to Alice here as she should be took every care with, and the poor child had no one belonging to her.
The poor wretch. Half starved she was. A gypsy she was, I believe.
Well, what happened then exactly, Alice?
She lived with us a matter of 3 weeks, it might be, and then whether she was something of a gypsy in her blood or whatnot, but you know, one morning she was out of her bed before any of us had opened an eye. Neither track nor trace of her, I said on since. Master was terribly devastated. Had all the bonds dragged, no one could find her. But it's my belief she was had away by them gypsies, for there was singing round the house for as much as an hour the night she went.
Singing?
Oh, Alice, you're as deaf as you are blind, my dear.
Oh, I heard it, and you did too, Pa.
Rubbish.
You said there was a boy as well, Mrs. Bunch.
Oh, yes, that poor boy. He was a foreigner. Giovanni, he called himself. And he come a-tweaking his hurdy-gurdy at the very same one on the wall you noticed.
Yes, yes, I remember the lad so dark, so serious-like.
Well, round and about he goes down the drive one winter day, and Master had him in that minute, and asked all about where he came from, and how old he was, and how he made his way, and where his relatives were, and all as kind as heart could wish. But it went the same way with him.
They're an unruly lot, them foreign nations, you know, I do suppose. He was off one fine morning, just the same as the girl.
Why he went and what he'd done was our question for as much as a year after. He never took his hurdy-gurdy, and there it still hangs on that wall there.
Mrs. Bunch, may I play with the hurdy-gurdy?
Oh, of course, Master Stephen. Parks, would you mind?
Oh, not at all. There you go, Master Stephen. You might want to be careful with it, I reckon.
Thank you, Mr. Parks. How does one play such a thing, I wonder?
Master Stephen, you haven't had a bite of your breakfast. I made your favorite scones and all.
Now come, my boy, eat up. Like a good lad. A growing boy like yourself needs to be fit and strong. You realize that the spring equinox is approaching, don't you? The ancients consider this to be a critical time for the young.
What's wrong, Master Stephen? You don't seem like yourself today.
I'm all right, Mrs. Bunch. It's just that...
Yes, my boy?
I had a dream, Cousin Elias. A very peculiar dream.
Is that so?
Ah, now I understand. You had a bit of a nightmare, my poor Master Stephen.
It seemed so real, but it had to be a dream.
Tell me about your dream. You've piqued my curiosity now.
As you know, down the hall from my bedroom is that old disused bathroom.
Yes?
It's all locked up, as you know, but it has a glazed glass pane on the door.
That's right.
Well, I dreamt I was outside the door, looking through the glass.
Yes?
And the moon was shining through the window inside, and I saw a figure standing in the bath.
A figure? Fascinating. I must make a note of this in my book here. Go on, Stephen.
I thought it might be a corpse, but then its eyes opened, and its lips parted. And it smiled at me. A bluish-grayish hand lifted and rested on its chest. And then it spoke to me.
Pussycat, where have you been? I've been to London to see the Queen. Pussycat, what did you there? I frightened a little mouse under her chair.
Interesting. Most interesting. Mrs. Bunch, have you any more of these scones?
It was then I awoke from my dream. And then...
Yes, Master Stephen.
I went to the old bathroom at the end of the hall and looked inside.
And what did you see?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
Well, there's a brave boy then. I would wager the most boys your age would not have dared return to the scene of a nightmare, especially just after having dreamt it. Well, I salute thee. Splendid. Splendid indeed.
Mrs. Bunch was much impressed by young Master Stephen's story, and went so far as to replace the muslin curtain over the glazed door of the bathroom. Not long after, two incidents occurred about this time that made an impression upon Stephen's mind.
Master Stephen.
Yes, Mrs. Bunch?
A word with you, please. Come here.
You seem so cross with me, Mrs. Bunch. What's the matter?
Gracious me, Master Stephen. How did you manage to tear your nightdress all to flinders this way? Look here, sir, what troubles you do give to poor servants that have to darn and mend after you.
Mrs. Bunch, I promise you, those tears were not on my dressing gown last night. I have no recollection.
Oh, well, it looks like you were in bed with a gang of wolves this way. This gown is torn. Well, look here, it looks as if you tore your chest to shreds.
Oh, dear. Mrs. Bunch, they look just the same as the scratches on the outside of my bedroom door, and I'm sure I never had anything to do with making them.
Show me your bedroom door, Master Stephen.
You see?
I wouldn't say nothing to Master, not if I was you, Master Stephen, my dear. Make sure to turn the key of the door when you go to your bed.
I always do, Mrs. Bunch, as soon as I've said my prayers.
Oh, that's a good child. Always say your prayers. That way no one can hurt you.
Bah! That does it. That does it. Master may get up on his own one if he likes during the evening. Either I do it in the daytime or not at all, Mrs. Bunch. I don't know what it may be. Very like it's the rats or the wind got into the cellars, but I'm not so young as I was, and I can't go through with it as I have done.
Oh, so now you can admit it. I'm not the only one who hears things and sees things, after dark especially.
Quiet, Alice.
Oh, you're both off your heads, I say.
Many a time I've heard the tale from the men in the shipyards about the rat that could speak, Mrs. Bunch, but I've never laid no confidence in that before. But tonight, if I dare to lay my ear to the door of the further bin, I could pretty much have heard what they were saying.
Oh, Mr. Parks, I've no patience with your fancies. Rats talking in the wine cellar, indeed.
But he's right, Mrs. Bunch.
Oh.
Mrs. Bunch, I have no wish to argue with you. All I say is, if you choose to go to the far bin and lay your ear to the door, you may prove my words this minute.
What nonsense you do talk, Mr. Parks. Not fit for children to listen to. Why, you'll be frightening young Master Stephen there out of his wits.
Master Stephen, didn't see you sitting over there. Well, there's a good lad, eh? Master Stephen knows well enough when I'm playing a joke with you, right, Mrs. Bunch?
In fact, Master Stephen knew much too well to suppose that Mr. Parks had in the first instance intended a joke. He was interested, not altogether pleasantly, in the situation, and all his questions were unsuccessful in inducing the butler to give any more detailed account of his experiences in the wine cellar. The following day was a day of curious experiences for young Master Stephen. A windy, noisy day that filled the house and the gardens with a gloomy impression. As Stephen stood by the fence of the grounds and looked out into the park, he felt as if an endless procession of unseen people were sweeping past him restlessly on the wind. After luncheon that day, Mr. Abney said,
"Stephen, my boy, do you think you could manage to come here to me in my study tonight at 11 o'clock? I shall be busy until that time, and I wish to show you something connected with your future life, which it is most important that you should know. Now, you are not to mention this matter to Mrs. Bunch, nor to anyone else in the house, and you had better go to your room at the usual time."
11 o'clock? How exciting! The latest I've ever been allowed to stay up is 9 p.m. on Christmas Eve.
Well, it being that you just turned 12, I'd say that you are mature enough to warrant occupying the later hours of the evening.
Is that a griddle on the fireplace, Cousin Elias?
Yes. I shall prepare us a little late-night morsel. A midnight snack, perhaps. And since you are entering manhood, perhaps a healthy drop of this as well.
Wine? Really? I can have a sip of wine?
Well, perhaps, if you're a good boy. Stephen.
Yes, Cousin Elias.
Has anyone ever remarked to you what a perfect example of boyhood you are? Exemplary, really. It's a pity how fleeting it all is. Cheeks almost as rosy as your lips, and such a lovely thick mane of hair, such hair, running my fingers through it now only makes me wish I had such locks upon my own head. All right, then. I have much work to do this afternoon. I'll look forward to seeing you here tonight at 11 o'clock, my dear boy.
I'm very much looking forward to it.
The wind had fallen, and there was a still night and a full moon. It was now 10 o'clock, and Stephen was standing at the open window of his bedroom, looking out over the country. Still as the night was, the mysterious population of the distant moonlit woods was not yet lulled to rest. From time to time, strange cries, as of lost and despairing wanderers, sounded from across the mere. They might be the notes of owls or water birds, yet they did not quite resemble either sound. And were they not coming nearer? Stephen sat on his bed and read aloud to himself a chapter from Robinson Crusoe to stave off the mysterious sounds and the overpowering sensation of dread and loneliness that crept upon him.
By this time it blew a terrible storm indeed, and now I began to see the terror and amazement in the faces, even of the seamen of themselves. The master, though vigilant to the business of preserving the ship, yet as he went in and out of his cabin by men, I could hear him softly say to himself several times, "Lord, be merciful to us. We shall be all lost. We shall be all undone." And the...
The book fell from Stephen's hands, and he went again to the window. He choked with a violent shudder as he discovered the source of the wheezing sounds of the hurdy-gurdy, and who, or what, was plucking its dust-covered strings. There they stood, on the gravel terrace that ran along the garden side of the hall, the figures of a boy and a girl. They stood side by side, looking up at the windows. Something in the form of the girl recalled irresistibly his dream of the figure in the bath. The boy inspired him with more acute fear.
"O Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name."
The girl stood still, half smiling, with her hands clasped over her heart.
Pussy cat, where have you been? I've been to London to see the Queen. Pussy cat, what did you there? I frightened a little mouse under her chair.
The boy, a thin shape, with black hair and ragged clothing, had an appearance of menace and unappeasable hunger and longing. The moon shone upon his almost transparent hands, and Stephen saw that through them as he plucked the strings of the hurdy-gurdy. For a moment he lowered the instrument and disclosed a terrifying spectacle. On the left side of his chest there opened a black and gaping hole. In the next moment, the dreadful pair had moved swiftly and noiselessly over the dry gravel, and Stephen saw them no more. Inexpressibly frightened as he was, he determined to take his candle and go down to Mr. Abney's study, for the hour appointed for their meeting was now at hand.
I've got you. Don't look anymore. Oh, my poor babe. It's over now. Come away now, dearest.
Stephen had found his cousin, Mr. Abney, in his chair, his head thrown back, his face stamped with an expression of rage, fright, and mortal pain. In his left side was a terrible lacerated wound, exposing the heart. There was no blood in his hands, and a long knife that lay on the table was perfectly clean. On the table in Mr. Abney's study, certain papers were found which explained the situation to Stephen Elliot when he was of an age to understand them. The most important sentences were as follows.
It is recorded, Simon Magus, that he was able to fly in the air, to become invisible, or to assume any form he pleased, by the agency of the soul of a boy whom, to use the libelous phrase, he had murdered. I find it set down with considerably more detail in writings elsewhere that similar happy results may be produced by the absorption of the hearts of not less than 3 human beings below the age of 21 years. To the testing of the truth of this theory, I devoted the greater part of my last 20 years, selecting as the corpora vilia of my experiment such persons as could conveniently be removed without occasioning a sensible gap in society. The first being the removal of one Phoebe Stanley, a girl of gypsy extraction, on March 24th, 1863. The second, by the removal of a wandering Italian lad named Giovanni Paoli on the night of March 23rd, 1873. The final victim, to employ a word repugnant in the highest degree to my feelings, must be my cousin Stephen Elliot. His day must be this March 24th, 1883. The best means of effecting the required absorption is to remove the heart from the living subject, to reduce it to ashes, and to mingle them with about a pint of some red wine, preferably port. The remains of the first 2 subjects, at least, it will be well to conceal. A disused bathroom or wine cellar will be found convenient for such a purpose. I contemplate with the liveliest satisfaction that the experiment, if successful,
will confer on me, not only placing me beyond the reach of so-called human justice, but eliminating to a great extent the prospect of death itself.
Master Stephen, my dear Master Stephen, I did not know. Please, please believe me. I did not know.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Martina Da Silva. Magnificent Ms. Martina Da Silva with her rendition of Lady Jane by Mr. Michael Jagger and Mr. Keith Richards. And now this word from one of our sponsors.
Ugh, not again. I can't sleep.
Me neither, no matter how hard I try. I got a big day tomorrow, too.
Perhaps I can help.
Look, it's Timmons Chesterwick.
I have no idea who that is. Who are you, guy?
It's Timmons Chesterwick, honey, star of British Masterwork Theatre.
Oh, that's why I never heard of you.
I understand that slumber eludes you this evening. Perhaps this will help.
Forgotten British classics read by Timmons Chesterwick?
Yes. Available on 40 CDs, 3 hard drives, or as a sleep powder. I read dated, stuffy, forgotten, but unjustly overlooked classics by your favorite authors, some of whom you may have even heard of. Shall I begin?
Oh, I can feel it working already, guy.
Take this passage from the great Dickering Street Hyphens classic, The Winds of Whipplesworth. Oh, Lady Polypsbury, cried Fraughtus Frumfellow. I, am receding without precipitation, one who decries popinjays at Quigley Court, hence curtailed, whence, whereupon, hence hereafter, hitherto. It appears my work is done here. Pleasant dreams, fair companions.
Introducing the finest in British literature, sleep aids. Timmins Chesterwick's Forgotten British Classics. Time-worn tomes, unappreciated and unabridged, read for your non-waking enjoyment. Enjoy the best night's sleep you've ever experienced with Timmins Chesterwick's Forgotten British Classics.
Oh, the fog has lifted for the moment. Runway is clear as we land at Heathrow Airport. As we're making our way back to London Town, the London of the present day, so that we may present for you tonight the final tale, The London Valdemar, an acidic Anglo-American anecdote about the hard and dingy realities behind the glitz and glamour of city nightlife.
Okay, I'm going to press the recorder and then we can begin.
Okay. And go.
I'm here with Bobby Belize, the famous and sometimes controversial American entrepreneur and nightlife maven. Mr. Belize, welcome to London.
Hey, thanks.
It's just been announced that you will be opening a London branch of your growing franchise of nightclub venues.
That's right. I have my Valdemar clubs in Los Angeles and New York. And I'm proud to announce that the London Valdemar has just begun construction and will open sometime later this year. I really dislike the word franchise, by the way.
Why is that?
Oh, it makes it sound like I'm opening a McDonald's or something. My Valdemar clubs are each unique works of art. The nightlife of the City of London will be benefiting greatly from my club.
Wow. Quite a confident claim to make there, Mr. Belize, eh?
I'm a confident guy. And a successful one.
I'm beginning to see that. Were there any obstacles in bringing your nightclub business here across the Atlantic?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, there have been some alleged scandals surrounding your businesses in America. Wild, out-of-control parties and orgies. Drugs. Deaths.
That's the key word there. Alleged. I had no trouble at all opening my club in the UK. Yeah, maybe that's because I have no criminal record whatsoever. Neither I nor any of my staff or business associates have ever broken a single law. Hey, welcome to London, Carmen. How's your flight? Not too jet-lagged, I hope.
Bobby, we need to talk.
Isn't that what we're doing now?
You know, I'm starting to worry about you.
You don't have to do that.
Well, that's what I'm paid to do, isn't it?
And you do it so well. You're worth every penny, hon.
Bobby, this is your first venture outside of the U.S., and I'm afraid you might be underestimating certain effects.
I'm three steps ahead of all these limeys, babe. Maybe even four steps.
Things are different here. This isn't New York or L.A.
Oh, for the most part, this has been a breeze in comparison. I've got what they want, and they want it bad. They need it, and we've already broken ground. Construction's underway. Why are you sweating all the small stuff?
Small stuff. Really, Bobby. Small stuff. Priscilla Lowndes is a friggin' member of Parliament, and Ray Gentle, or Gentle Ray as he's affectionately known by the many disfigured corpses he's left rotting at the bottom of the Thames. Small stuff, huh?
Yep, small stuff. They're much smaller people in person. Hey, come on, put your raincoat back on. We got a little meeting with Priscilla Lowndes, right here, in fact. Hey, sorry we're running a little late, Priscilla.
Oh, that's quite all right, Bobby. I've only been sitting here for 20 minutes.
Sorry to keep you waiting.
This is my long-suffering attorney, Carmen Metz. She just flew in this afternoon.
Poor dear, you must be exhausted. Please sit. Pleased to meet you. Priscilla Lowndes.
Nice to meet you, Miss Lowndes.
So, what do you recommend here on the menu, Priscilla?
Well, everything here is exceptional at Le Gavroche. But you'll have to pardon me. I won't be joining you for dinner.
It's because we're late, isn't it? Look, I'm so sorry, Miss Lowndes. I know how bad it looks, but...
Oh, no, it's not that at all. It's just that I don't want to keep such company for longer than is necessary, if you understand my meaning.
Just when I thought you were starting to like me, Priscilla.
You know, I've been meaning to tell you this, but I don't recall ever giving you permission to refer to me by my first name, Bobby.
Hey, okay, Your Highness.
Very funny, Mr. Belize. Almost as fun as what I discovered when your delivery was received this afternoon for certain crucial services rendered.
Oh, funny. What was funny about it?
Oh, it was quite the farce, I assure you. About $1 million less than the amount we originally agreed to.
Oh. Yeah, I guess I can see the humor in it now. Now that you mention it.
Well?
Well, what?
Would you like to tell me when I can expect to see the rest?
I would like to tell you. I would like to tell you that I think you overcharge for some of your services. And your prices are a little unfair, considering I didn't get all that I asked for in return.
I don't think you understand who you are toying with, Mr. Belize. I will expect the remainder of what is owed by tomorrow afternoon, plus an additional $300,000 as a penalty for your most grievous and thoughtless error in cash.
You'll make that and much more on the back end, and you know it. Why get greedy, Priscilla?
Oh, that's fine. Have it your way. Good evening.
Sit down, Priscilla.
What did you just say to me?
I said sit down. I figure we can start with dessert first.
What is that?
And does this bring back any memories? The New Wellington Hotel, Leeds, September 22nd, 2003.
How did you...
Yeah, maybe you should open it in a bathroom stall. The levee, as you blokes call it. Warning, definitely not safe for work. Elections coming up so soon. 'Tis the season for a scandal. Fa-la-la-la-la.
Are you trying?
Not trying, succeeding. Go on, open it.
No, I won't.
You know, I never took you for a wild sex and drugs type, Priscilla. Hey, check this out. I have what's in that envelope and a hell of a lot more. So why don't we just drop the strong arm act and let's get real reasonable with each other. Take the very generous sum I offered you. Finish what I paid you to get done, and you will be richly rewarded when the time comes.
Very well. Be warned, Mr. Belize. One day, you're going to see me up close when you're on your way down to the gutter. Pray that day does not come for you soon, sir.
And there she goes. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm so hungry I could eat British food.
What is the matter with you, Bobby?
Boundaries, Carmen. One thing I've learned over time, you gotta set boundaries with people like that.
What was in that envelope?
Go on, take a look.
There's nothing in the envelope. What? How did you... What?
Presto! Bing! Bang! Alakazam! I'll tell you how I did it later. Hello! Waiter! Hey, can we get some service here?
So what do you think? You ever seen anything like it?
Yeah, it's cool.
Cool. Is that all you gotta say? Cool. Get this, Yankdell. I'm sure I'm gonna find something likable about him yet.
You definitely have one of the nicer clubs around here, Ray.
Nicer? We have all the top DJs fighting for the chance to get a night here. What's his name? The bloke we had here? The right famous geezer?
Skrillex?
Yeah, him.
He was here once, I think. He forgot his jacket, I believe.
Ah. So he didn't play here then?
No, but we was able to find his jacket, all right.
Well, I'm sorry that my club doesn't live up to your lofty expectations, Bobby. But you best understand that this is the main hub, the very heart of it all. All that flows in this town must pass through here. You catch my meaning, Bobby?
Hey, like a pop fly.
Eh, what?
Sorry, American reference.
It's a thing in baseball, I believe, Ray, the pop fly.
Yeah, well, I always thought you could do more damage with a cricket bat versus a baseball bat.
True, but the baseball bat is a little more portable, wouldn't you say?
You remember that scene in The Untouchables? Robert De Niro with that baseball bat.
Hey.
Teamwork. Whack, whack! Now imagine that same scene played with a cricket bat. Isn't that a great piece of cinema, Bobby?
I don't know. It doesn't really hold up for me.
What? You must be joking, my son. It's a bloody masterpiece.
It seems a little dated to me. I thought it was pretty hip by, 80s standards. Kind of like this club.
Takes the piss, but I like that. I like that. This guy. So everything off to a good start, Bobby, with the construction, that is.
Yep. Appreciate all that you've done so far.
Well, I am a key investor in your enterprise after all. Don't mention it. How did it go with Priscilla? Did you do what I told you?
Yeah. I got her to calm down. Hey, thanks for the tip.
That sodgy sow. And the world has the nerve to call us criminals. For the love of it, it's a filthy river we all must swim in, my son.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep the sewage off my clothes.
You have good luck with that.
Well, Ray, Del, I think I'm going to head back to my flat to turn in.
Oh, you sure you can't join us for a drink?
Oh, I'm exhausted. And I have a long day tomorrow.
You sure now?
Yeah. Thanks, though.
Well, right off you go, then. You keep an eye on him for me, Dale, will you?
Will do, Ray.
He's a slippery one, that Bobby Bellies. Even his name is oily and dodgy, isn't it? Well, I reckon if you can't beat him, invest in him.
There's more in it for us that way, right?
Yeah, I guess. We just gotta watch him is all. As long as he don't interfere with my distribution, we'll be all right.
And if he does?
Well, my darling, then God save him from the devil. That is Ray Gentle.
I'm still concerned that you're biting off more than you can chew here, Bobby.
How many times do I have to prove you wrong, Carmen?
This place is going to be 3 times the size of your other clubs.
And after this, I have my eye on Prague, and Paris, and maybe even Tokyo after that.
Can we just finish building this one before we continue your plan for world domination?
Hey, who's that over there?
I don't see anyone.
Look! What's she snooping around for? Hey! You! What are you doing there?
What? Where? I can't see.
Oh, Christ, look, Carmen, there.
Now I can't. What's she putting in that little plastic bag?
Hey, I'm talking to you. Excuse me, miss? What are you doing there?
Forgive me.
You realize you're trespassing on private property. Who the hell are you?
I'm Paula Elms, an archivist and historian with the Royal Historical Society.
What did you just put in that little bag?
I'm sorry, I didn't think I was harming anyone. When you broke ground on these old foundations, some nagging suspicions I had were confirmed.
You could have asked me before sneaking onto the property, you know.
Would you have allowed me?
Of course not.
It's beside the point.
Miss Elms, what did you just pick up off the ground? Something of historical importance?
Well, I can't be sure, but it might be a bit of bone. Human bone.
Interesting. Let me see.
Yeah.
I can't tell. So, this is why you're poking around here? Tell you what, if we find anything interesting, I'll let you know.
For a long time, we've suspected that this very site was standing atop a great labyrinth of catacombs. But we've never been able to conduct a dig to find out for sure, since the Society couldn't afford to fund such an enterprise, particularly one that didn't have enough evidence to justify such an excavation.
Well, considering you took the name for your clubs from an Edgar Allan Poe story, it's eerily fitting.
Well, sir, with all your building and drilling on this place, you might be doing all the work for us.
Hey, don't get any ideas. There's a nightclub going up here. Wait a second. Just got an idea. Now, what if there are catacombs here? I mean, we could incorporate them in the club somehow, maybe, huh? Hey, I like where this is heading.
Pardon my saying so, but I feel that would be in very poor taste and would result in a missed opportunity for scholars and historians to properly study and examine what could be one of the most remarkable finds of the century.
Well, it's not for you to say so.
Oh, jeez. Is there anybody in this country who's not going to try and give me a hard time?
Please understand my position. If my estimations are correct, if there are catacombs here, they would date from about 1665. The year of the Great Plague of London, and it would only mean...
Can you give me your business card, Mrs. Elms?
I think I have one. Yes, yeah, here you are.
Let's try going about this the right way, and give me a call tomorrow.
Okay, I certainly will.
The bubonic plague, huh? I remember that from a history class as a kid in school, the Black Death. Wiped out half of London, right?
I think you're confusing the Great Plague of London in 1665 with the Black Death of the 14th century. More like 25% of Londoners were killed by the former. It was the Black Death that killed half the population.
You say potato. I mean, has there ever been another outbreak since?
No, not since then.
Interesting.
There might be some ghastly stories waiting to be told lying beneath us right now.
What do you mean?
To help prevent the spread of the disease, some unfortunate souls may have been buried while they were still alive. Can you imagine what that must have been like?
Well, I definitely want to continue this conversation, but I have a meeting I need to get to right now, Ms. Elms. But you mind if I take one of your business cards as well? Thanks. Be in touch.
You what?
She said she was with the Royal Historical Society. I checked her out. She is.
Are you daft, man? Of course she is. What are we gonna do?
I'm sorry. I don't understand what the big deal is. Help me out here.
We don't want that kind of attention, my son. Use your brains for a moment, will you? Fossart is declared a historic landmark. We're done. You hear me? Done. Priscilla's behind this. I'm sure of it.
Didn't think any of that.
That don't make it any better, Bobby. We gotta think. Who's this historian you met today? What's her name?
The Paula Elms. It's her business card.
Give me that. Bravo, my son. Del, pay Miss Paula Elms a visit, would you?
Got it.
Hey, what are you going to do?
Don't worry about it. We're just going to nip this in the bud before it spreads anywhere else.
She's just an uptight bookworm. I don't think we have to go too rough on her.
Leave that all to us, Mr. Belize. Don't worry. You won't have to get your hands dirty with this.
Hey, there's got to be another way.
Are you prepared to flush millions of pounds down the toilet? I'm not. Not with my money. That's the only other way I could think of.
Ray.
You're not about to stand in my way, are you? Do not interfere, my son. Don't make this your fight. Not with me. You're blocking the door, Bobby. That's a good lad. Thanks. I'll give you the weather forecast later. Hopefully it clears up.
Carmen, I'm driving right now. What is it?
Come down to the site. It's amazing. They struck upon a passage.
What do you mean, a passage? They found catacombs?
Yeah, I think so. Looks like it.
Okay. I'm heading over there right now. Don't tell anyone else. Not that lady, Paula, the press, the police, anyone else. Tell the same thing to anyone else who's still there. You understand me? Okay, everyone else gone for the day?
Yeah, it's just you and me here now.
Wow, you look at that. You been in there yet?
No, just a few yards, that's all though. Imagine, it's those catacombs Paul Elms was going on about.
You have a flashlight?
Just on my phone.
Yeah, me too. I don't have a whole lot of battery left.
Yeah, me neither.
Ah, hell with it. Let's go in.
It sure is spooky in there. I got the creeps big time when I peeked in earlier. Who knows how long it goes on for? Maybe it's like those catacombs they found in Rome. The ones that go on forever.
Yeah, London was founded by the Romans, wasn't it? Yeah, let's take a look. Well, come on.
I can't.
Don't tell me you're scared.
I have really acute claustrophobia. I'll have a panic attack down there. I know it.
Whatever. Wait here for me. I won't be too long.
Oh, Bobby, be careful.
There, around the corner. Is that you, Ray? I'm on to you. I'm armed as well. I have a... God damn it. Phone's dead. Okay. No light. Where the hell am I? This isn't good. Belize, leave a message.
Damn it! Bobby, where are you? You've been down there for almost an hour. Okay, I think I have to call the police. Oh, he's gonna be so angry with me, though, if I do that. You know, screw it! I'm calling them. Bobby! What's happened to you?
Carmen?
Start all over again, my dear. What happened to Bobby here?
He was in and out on the way to the hospital. He was raving.
What did he say to you?
That Paula Elms was right.
Yeah, did he say what she was right about?
Not really. He He said his phone died. He had no light down there.
How did his clothes get all torn up like that?
He kept going on and on about glowing eyes and many, many hands reaching at him, clawing at him in the dark, trying to tear him apart.
It's quite a stunt there.
You had something to do with this, didn't you, Mr. Gentle?
And why would I do such a thing?
Well, his club is a potential threat to your operation, isn't it?
I can see you're very shook up, my pet. But that doesn't really add up, does it? I suppose you're going to blame me for his having caught the bubonic plague as well. Not so easy for anyone to explain that either, is it? There hasn't been a case of that in England for over a century.
Well, we'll all find out the whole truth once he regains consciousness. The doctors expect him to revive in a few days.
And we'll make sure he has the very best of care, Miss Metz. And he's well looked after.
They're afraid he won't be able to walk again.
That is horrible. Poor Bobby.
Hello, Ms. Metz. Ray.
Hello, Priscilla. How are you with the miracle cure for our friend, yeah?
Well, if I had one, I would gladly use it. If only so that Bobby Belize's full mental and physical health may be restored, so he can be fit to stand trial for extortion, bribery, drug trafficking, and whatever else I can dredge up.
Oh, my God. I'm going to call the nurse. I think he's coming out of the coma.
Yes, yes. You should go call the nurse. Bobby? Oh, Bobby? Can you hear me? Oh, I hope that you can. You have no nightclub. Not anymore. I've seen that. Oh, did you hear that? Did you hear it? You're through. I told you I'd be here when this moment arrived. Tell Ms. Metz that I expect to be calling on her and her client very soon. Oh, by the way, these flowers are from me. Good afternoon.
Well, there she goes.
Roses, eh? She gave him roses.
Well, what difference does it make?
Roses. Them's plague flowers. Ring-a-ring of roses. Ain't she never heard the nursery rhyme?
Ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Martina Da Silva.
How long, I wonder,
ladies and gentlemen, Ms. Martina Da Silva. With an amazing rendition of A Foggy Day in London Town by George and Ira Gershwin. My friends, before we part, I thought it would be interesting to note that it was on this day, Sunday, 31st of May, that the great diarist and chronicler of 17th century Restoration London, Samuel Pepys, well, he penned his final entry in his prolific diary, mainly due to his failing eyesight. The brief but poignant passage reads, "And thus ends all that I doubt I shall ever be able to do with my own eyes in the keeping of my journal, I being not able to do it any longer, I must forbear, and therefore resolve from this time forward to have it kept by my people in longhand, and must therefore be contented to set it down no more than is fit for them and all the world to know. Or if there be anything, I must endeavor to keep a margin in my book open, to add here and there a note in shorthand with my own hand. And so I betake myself to that course, which is almost as much as to see myself go into my grave, for which, and all the discomforts that will accompany my being blind, the good God prepare me." Well, that concludes tonight's program. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Thank you. Let's keep that huge hand going for our exceptionally stellar cast. Ms. Lauren Elder. Mr. James Reeser. Ms. Courtney Gillian Cholovich. Ms. Annabelle Rollison. Mr. Michael Pate. Mr. Bill Heydrich. Mr. Gustavo Rodriguez. Our otherworldly musical score was improvised and performed by the magnificent Mr. Dov Mansky. That ghostly singing voice you heard was our very own Ms. Martina Da Silva. Our theme music is by BAFTA award-winning composer Mr. Jason Graves. For more information, yes, give him a hand. For more information about Jason, including links to his Twitters and Facebooks, at jasongraves.com, you shall find all of that. Our sound engineer this evening is the amazing Mr. Andrew Hammond. Special thanks to the fabulous and most warm, welcoming, and hospitable staff here at the Slipper Room. Our show was written by Mr. Silbin Sandovar. Thank you. It was produced by myself, Mr. Daniel Graves, Mrs. Rebecca Graves, and Mr. Gustavo Rodriguez. We shall return to the Slipper Room in September with a fresh new season of Fireside Thrills. Stay tuned for more details. For all things Fireside, including links to our celebrated podcast and show listings, and lots of other fun stuff, simply go to firesidemysterytheater.com. Again, the podcast links you shall find there. You can also find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm sure there are some other things. We're loads of fun to follow, so please do. This is your very own Ali Silva.
I do want to take this moment to express my gratitude for the amazing support of you, dear audience. Without you, well, we certainly have a lot of fun on our own. However, it's nothing like the fun we have making this magic for you. I can speak for myself and my amazing co-producers in feeling such honor to be working and playing with this amazingly talented team for you. As the bard once penned, parting is such sweet sorrow indeed. As it breaks my heart to part the magnificence that is that beautiful town, London, as the fog finally does fade and the path ahead becomes clear, there may still be dark corners to reckon with. So please, my dears, I do beg you to mind the shadows. Good night.
For listening to Fireside Mystery Theater. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and please rate and review us on iTunes. For live show dates, please visit our website at firesidemysterytheater.com. And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. As always, be sure to mind the shadows.